Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 29th of February, recording at 9:24 p.m. And that's Greenwich Mean Time, of course. And this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. Global stock markets, the weaker tone re-emerging, particularly yesterday and today. In terms of government bonds, big rallies occurring, particularly in the last 2 days. And in currencies, the US dollar has been very weak. It's just a fraction steadier today. And precious metals, gangbusters. Well, not all the way around. Platinum had been gangbusters in earlier weeks. We have seen silver accelerating this week. We have seen gold very steady within an orderly trend, closing out the week. Spot bullion at 972.73, and silver up here. I'm looking at the May contract, but that's lost around the 19.92 cents. Been hovering a bit below that $20 level, emotive $20 level, for most of the day. We have seen strong gains in oil this week, going to a new all-time high, up as high as on NYMEX. Sweet crude is 103.05 today, but closing down at 101.72. And natural gas, a little easier, but it's had a good week on the upside, a little easier in here today, 9.35 for the first month. And industrial metals had some explosive rallies in here this week and just eased a little bit today, except for nickel. Nickel is up again today. The soybeans and corn have been very strong, wheat weaker and exceptionally volatile. Most of the other soft commodities have been a bit on the firm side. Lumber, which is, I think, in basing activity, but my fear is, as fear from the standpoint of having a long position, is while this is very cheap relative to other commodities, both industrials and foods, it may range and base formation development for a while. One can never tell how long those patterns will persist for. I hope not, but that's a possibility. Okay, but this is supposed to be the review, and I've been forecasting there on that. So let's go back to stock markets and what's actually happening. Well, we have had, following the shock and awe leading to the selling climax on the 22nd of November, we've seen some pretty feisty rallies here by a number of markets, and particularly within the Fuller Money themes. And some of those have run right back up close to their highs. Miners have been very good for the most part, although the ones making bids lagging. But Rio testing its high, Merrill Lynch World Mining Trust testing its, or very close to its high. So, Merrill Lynch Golden General Fund hitting a new all-time high. Gold shares, some of them going gangbusters. Lee here today, I didn't see the news item, but it had a huge upward move, very close to its all-time high today. And among those Asian markets, we've got China lagging. We've got India middle of range between its highs that we saw, I think, in early January, and that shock and awe reaction low later in the month. And we, let's see, we see Aberdeen, new Thai fund has been moving higher in here. And so has the Aberdeen New Dawn. So I'm just r running off some of the names in the top 10, my personal top 10 portfolio, which, of course, all of those positions reflect the favorite Fuller Money secular themes of, I'm not talking about emerging markets anymore, trying to avoid using that word. I'm trying to avoid using developed and developing words because I think they are really, really outdated, as I said yesterday and have written in here again today. I'm talking about progressing and regressing markets. Now, no market or no economy regresses permanently, hopefully, and although they can regress for a long time, and no economy progresses indefinitely, although they can progress for a very, very long time. For instance, among major economies, the USA is sadly leading the regressing tables. Europe is packing in there behind the States. What's progressing? Well, anything involving commodities, and most of Asia, Japan. The jury's still out, to use that tedious phrase, in terms of whether it's starting to progress once again or is just sort of in limbo between the two. My view is that Japan is slow burn, that it's at a very interesting level, but it may test our patience. Actually, testing one's patience is something that we need to be used to in terms of what I would regard as the more conventional markets that people usually look at, and the more conventional sectors. That is, all those things that are not Fuller Money secular themes of Asian progressing markets, resources, and resources markets, and global infrastructure. Markets. So anything that is not in those three really dynamic categories is, well, I'm going to say, did I say anything? I did. I'll say almost everything. There's bound to be something that's doing well that isn't in those categories, but not that much. And I think we have to get used to that. We're not going to snap out of this situation and get back into the type of nice orderly upward trends that we saw for the most part from that second quarter of 2003 right on into 2007. I think we're going to have more of what we've seen: choppy, ranging activity, nervousness, long convalescence activity. That's the appropriate term, I think, because what we're seeing is we've seen these financial institutions shoot themselves in the foot and a few other places, and of course there's been collateral damage inevitably. This is kind of an apt analogy, isn't it? It's a spur of the moment one, and so they're in intensive care and getting some help, but meanwhile, there are going to be other reoccurring symptoms that will flare up from time to time that will require additional attention. If you look peer way ahead, you have to say, well, this is going to be good. Because, as I've said all along, that the Fed would have to recapitalize the banks through the yield curve. Well, that's going on. They've got short-term interest rates down, lowish, and they're going lower. Very low today, given the rate of inflation. But again, most of that's coming from energy prices and food prices. Now, an awful lot of people are either wringing their hands or tut-tutting and saying that Bernanke should not be doing this, that he should be tightening or taking a fairly tough line in here, as Trichet is at the ECB. Well, Trichet is definitely taking some risks on the growth side, but critics of the Bernanke policy are saying that you're just treating an alcoholic here with more alcohol, or you're trying to put out a fire by pouring kerosene or gasoline on it. Look at the situation. If you have a housing market meltdown, lots of foreclosures, if you have consumer spending, if not grinding to a halt, slowing very, very considerably, and so those are deflationary pressures offsetting some of the inflation that we're actually seeing, which is coming from sectors that cannot really be treated effectively by monetary tightening. I mean, if the Fed were to jack interest rates up to 10%, and it's obviously not going to happen, but if they were to do that, would that change the grain shortage? Would it change the supply and elasticity problems that have driven metal prices up so high? Of course not. So really, those aren't going to change unless the world is thrown into some kind of very, very severe, severe recession. Now, some people think that. I think that's nonsense. We've got a reasonable degree of economic uncoupling here, in that we'll see growth being very attractive in Chindia, for instance, very attractive in the resources economies, so it slows a tad. There's never complete uncoupling in a global economy. So if the U.S.'s economy is very weak, and it is, then that has to be a headwind for America's trade partners. But if China's growth goes from 12 to 8 to 10%, and India is talking about pretty well maintaining its growth rate. I think they're looking for 8.7% this year. So even if they fall short by a percentage point or two, these are still very attractive, exceedingly attractive growth stories. Thus our strong preference for these themes. The resources economies are coining it. The oil producers, the metal producers, the food exporters, big food exporters around the world. The U.S. participates in some of that, but it's not enough. Their soybean, wheat, and corn sales are not offsetting the drag on the economy elsewhere. But again, the United States economy is far from a write-off in here, because you have multinational companies that are earning most of their, or generating most of their sales, and certainly most of their earnings revenue from overseas. And that's a healthy story. The domestic U.S. economy, on the other hand, is pretty moribund, ditto with the U.K. Domestic economy. I walk around a lot, and you see more shops closing every day, and the next ones aren't reopening at quite the same rate. Okay, so I think we're going to have this type of environment here, this long convalescence and ranging for quite some time. In the short term, we're going to see support levels challenged, because what happened? Wall Street and the European stock markets rallied up to those early February highs, and they bounced around there, testing them. They'd edge a little higher, but couldn't really break up out of those levels, unlike just most of the other markets, from Middle Eastern oil producers to a lot of those Asian tigers, to all the resources markets, or to say it surged back up the resources indices back up to their highs. So we've had this ranging activity in the European and the and with Wall Street's indices near those February highs, and they couldn't break upwards. Now, and then they started to erode yesterday, the day before, some of them. So that is what we have seen is we saw bears get squeezed following the climactic selling. They had it all their way up until the 22nd of January. Then the bears got squeezed. They came in again and got squeezed again. And they've been very much on the defensive. I think we're going to see an aggressive bearish attack here. We had one signal of it. UBS was coming out today with hugely bearish forecasts on other banks. And that's the game. Short positions and then talk the market down. Now, so I think we're going to have, I'll be surprised if we don't have a testing time in here next week. Do I think everything's and going to collapse? No. I suspect that there'll be a little bit of, well, there won't be too much leisure time for the Fed and the Treasury over the weekend. I suspect they'll be thinking about this and talking about this. The Fed is says signaled better late than never, of course, that it's prepared to throw everything it can at this situation, targeting the stock market, targeting the economy in a very difficult situation. I think that's probably the best thing to do, although some of my subscribers will be rolling their eyeballs when I say that, but it's probably the best thing to do in the sense that you have fairly horrific, very horrific recession without that. And really, what ought to happen is when the U.S. next gets on a more healthy footing, is then to restore some fiscal credibility. Will that happen? Yes, because I started this audio talking about the banks being in intensive care. And what's going to happen? They rebuild their balance sheets, that's a positive, with the help of sovereign wealth funds, with the help of the yield curve. This securitization bonanza is obviously going to be slimmed down drastically. It'll probably last about a generation, and then people will invent it all over again. They'll get back to more traditional, old-fashioned banking. Profits will be lower, but it'll be a more stable industry. The fact that profits will be lower presents a challenge for the economy because the financial sector was such an important part, such a big contributor to the profit figures. But we see how unstable that whole edifice was, and so we can now expect the financial sector to shrink down, be much, much less important part. And that's a theme that's going to be replayed in other countries as well, in the UK, and it'll cause more problems, I suspect, for the UK than it'll cause for Wall Street. And I noticed those Australian banks, which showed outstanding relative strength for quite a while last year, but then got absolutely clobbered last month, and they're interesting now on a yield standpoint, just the way the Western banks are interesting on a yield standpoint. But what I've said all along, expect a long convalescence. Don't expect any rapid move back up. Now, what about the fuller money themes? The Wall Street leash effect will pull them down somewhat. Somewhat. It depends. If things are worse than I suspect, and we test or take out some of those January lows, then they'll get pulled down a bit more. Markets are emotional. But then they'll snap right back up again in the next rally, as we've seen. Okay, what about the government bonds? I think shorting opportunities are over for a while. Very powerful upward dynamics. Now that has created an interesting situation overall. I would be far more worried if the bond market vigilantes, as they're called, were driving those yields sharply higher, in a background against which, frankly, I would be leveraging up short positions. But no, stopped out yesterday of my U.S. Treasury positions, and or was it the day before? I can't remember. And they're up sharply in here again today, and that has widened the yield curve. That is good for the banks in terms of their being able to borrow cheaply from the Fed window and leverage it up in the long-dated treasuries. We do not have long-term interest rates moving up. They're actually quite low and around or even below the rate of inflation. But that's not a bad situation here for a very weak economy. Do the bonds represent value? Certainly not, in here. But that doesn't mean that they can't be steady here for a while. I would not be surprised if we'd had some coordinated central bank plunge protection team intervention here to push up the bond prices, bring down the long-dated yields once again, because there are plenty of other countries that do not want to see those long-dated yields backing up too much. Okay, what about the US dollar? Well, it's overextended in the short term. We've had a bit of a downward acceleration here, but it did break down to new all-time lows. And unless that dollar index gets back up above 76 and holds it, well, it would have to get back up above 76 to signal a downside failure. I have commented frequently that I see these various reports, people saying that the dollar is going to get a big recovery rally here, or that the downsides factored in, the U.S. problems are factored in, the rate cuts are factored in. Well, it doesn't work that way in currency markets, because I've mentioned before, if rates are low, short-term rates are low, and that currency is not appreciating, then anybody who's got a long dollar trade on is losing money fast, and they won't do it. They won't put up with that. Now, you will get periodic rallies because people will short the dollar, then it'll go down, and then if enough people short it, and then it'll accelerate downwards, and then that'll be a short-term ending, as we've seen recently. Then you'll get a bounce, either a very modest one, or if people are really aggressively short, you'll get a bigger bounce. But why should somebody go in and buy this low-yielding dollar when the U.S. continues to print like mad? And the US economy is so weak. There are vibrant economies out there with much higher interest rates, and that's where and some of those currencies are really quite undervalued. People say, dollar defenders say, well, on a PPP, purchasing power parity basis, the dollar is cheap. Well, that's never been an effective indicator in terms of what currencies are going to do, in my experience. What really counts, that hard fundamental, is interest rate differentials, and those are negative for the dollar and about to become more negative as of the 10th of November. I think that's when the Fed next lowers rates, and lower rates it will. What about gold and the other precious metals? I've mentioned this approximately 26-month cycle that we have seen, and that it usually, well, the two previous versions of this, and I'm talking about the cycles that we've seen just in this decade within this primary upward trend have been about 26 months of a medium-term cycle, ending in acceleration, then a sharp reaction, long-ranging consolidation, support-building phase, leading to another upward move, ending in acceleration. Well, there's no doubt that we've been accelerating in here. Is it too far? Well, I don't think it's over yet. Platinum, which has led so often, has not given a downward signal. It has lost upward momentum, but it hasn't come down enough. There hasn't been a single downward dynamic on platinum, and therefore it has not done enough damage to longs. It has not frightened the bulls. It has certainly not given an invitation to the short sellers to come in. And silver, I mentioned that silver is the latest one to accelerate. It's had a spectacular week. But if you go into the chart library and look at silver on a weekly chart and then put it on the semi-log scale, you'll notice that this current acceleration is not as big as the two previous accelerations. So I would think we go a bit higher. It's just it's kind of breathtaking stuff when it's going on, and it wasn't all that long ago that I said that I mean, kind of a bold forecast. Just probably wasn't more than a week ago, maybe a week and a half, saying that silver looked like it could had a good chance to get to at least 20, and well, it's gotten there, and it's not over. And gold's trend is extremely orderly. If gold is going to accelerate, and it's not a given, of course, it doesn't have to end that way. It can diverge from that previous cyclical pattern, but the others are not diverging. So that would suggest the odds favor that the others hold up long enough to give gold time to eventually accelerate as well. Now, that's very good news for people who are holding bullion because it's an extremely orderly pattern, gold bullion, extremely orderly pattern with no sign whatsoever of acceleration. So, again, this is maturing, but I emphasize that it's not over. And whatever peak levels we accelerate to and then fall from, an acceleration is always an ending of an unspecified duration, but common sense tells you that the bigger the acceleration, the bigger the reaction will be. So what was my kind of, sorry, lost my theme in there, but I think that it will be another reaction and medium term consolidation within that long-term bull market for precious metals, which has some very old themes that I've been talking about since 2001, such as precious metals being remonetized in the eyes of investors. Well, people used to laugh at that, except for some veteran subscribers, and it's true that we live in a fiat currency world, and central banks have been printing money like sting. Industrial metals, I mentioned that they're back in form. They were never going to stay out of fashion for all that long, and I think we'll see some pretty good moves up this year. We already have, but I think we will in addition to what we've already seen. And in the short term, because they've had very good gains, if Wall Street has a weak performance next week, that will rein in some of these gains. There'll be some contagion. We'll see some reactions. It usually happens. And I wouldn't bet against it not happening. I would think it's more very likely to happen. But those would be buying opportunities in the industrial metals, particularly the ones that are still quite depressed, such as nickel and zinc, but have been coming back into form recently. Crude oil, the producers, I feel, really could drive the market down if they wanted to. I think it would be very difficult for instance, the precious metal producers or the industrial metal producers to drive the market down, their markets down. But I think the oil producers could, but why should they? You know, they're looking at that weak dollar. So 103, which it reached today, isn't a huge compensation for the weakness in the currency that it's traded in. They will want to get the best price for their commodity, as anyone else would. And they're not in the business of subsidizing the West, although there's been a little bit of that from time to time on occasional concessions for weapons type of business. Realpolitik, as they call it. Grains and beans. Crowded trade, as I've said before. I don't think it's over for the sector, but the risks are high. Wheat is scary, the way this is swinging around here, and I think wheat is the most vulnerable of them. But you know, in a bull market, most of the surprises are on the upside. But I think that soybeans and corn, those are the ones that are in form. And if my source that I mentioned the other day on these grains and beans is right, then wheat's in for a tougher year. Soybeans may run into trouble later in the year, depending on how the crops go. And corn has upside potential because people will not have planted enough of it. Now, the counter to that corn argument, if there is one, is that the ethanol business is dying. Well, it's not going to die out completely, but it's in retreat, and not a bad thing either. So, I think that's pretty much it. I hope so. And I just say then, have an absolutely splendid, restful, fun weekend, which is what I hope to do. All the best.